Welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Watch us live every Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11:05 a.m. at gosblive.com. Or visit us in person. You can find directions at gostonebridge.com. Connect with us on our social media at facebook.com/gostonebridge and our Instagram at sbchurch.
All right, good morning again. So we've been working on how does Jesus give us strength? Where do we get our strength from? And talking about a few things. Today I want to do something that's sort of different in digging into this idea of having strength or finding a secure path for the future. Because if we're honest, most of us, that's where we really struggle. What's coming? What's up ahead? How am I going to make it through the things that, you know, I don't know what they are. I don't know what they look like. I have a chance sometimes to go get away with some other preacher types, some other ministers. And a couple weeks ago, as we were away for several days, one of the guys brought up this. He's going through a lot of stress and a lot of struggle and trying to figure out what he's going to do in the next year or so. And they're a big deal, and it's good that you have these friendships. But this is what he said. I put this in your outline because I thought it was a really good question or something that you and I might ask also. He said this, if I only knew what was going to happen this next year. You ever thought that? If I only knew what was going to happen this next year. I mean, so I did this. I'm a little, say too many things, but this is what I did. I said, so how would that make your life different if you knew? I mean, if God told you, here's what's going to happen this next year, how would that make your life different? What would you do different? And I know that, you know, we think, oh, I would do a lot. So I'm not talking about if you knew which stock would fly through the roof, right? Or you knew which team was going to win the Super Bowl. I'm talking about there's a lot of things that you just don't know in life. And you think, we tend to think, if I just knew those things, how much better life would be. In fact, you know, the one thing that's amazing is how much money is spent in the world and especially in this country on going to people who claim to be able to tell you the future. They're either, you know, some sort of, you know, look at the stars, look at the tea leaves, do whatever, you know. And I saw a special and I was stunned at how much money some of these people are able to make claiming, telling you, oh, I can tell you. And I've done it with a couple of people too. Just, I can tell you the future. Just, you want to know? In the future, you're going to have trouble. You can go ahead and send me a check because, yeah. In the future, there are going to be good things in your life. You know, there are a lot of things you can come up with, but you want to know specifics. So if you knew the specifics, let me ask you a question. Really? Would your life really be that much better if you knew the specifics? In fact, you know what I've thought about? Maybe you should think about this also. If I knew, you know what, if I knew something was going to happen 8 months from now that I really did not want to happen, I would be stressed for 8 months. By the time it got here, I would be so worn out and I'd be such a mess all over something, you know, coming in the future. There are many times when I've had some really difficult things happen in my life, and I've spent time afterwards praying and thanking God that I didn't know ahead of time it was coming. Now, was it a shock? Yes, but it would not have helped me to know all those things. You know what helps me is to know where my hope is and who my trust is in. Because what God has done is he's given you something so much more powerful, so much better than knowing the future. And I'm not telling you that, you know, for instance, the Bible doesn't tell us some things about the future, but your relationship and my relationship must be built on a trust in the one who knows the future. Not in that we know it, that we understand it, we can tell you. That's not the way it works. Because if I knew, you know, what was coming, I would make a mess of my life. I would. You know, I'd own all the money in the world. I'd own every car in the world. I'd own every house in the world. If I knew what was coming, I could, you know, plan it all out and I'd make a mess of my life. So many times I'm grateful that God did not tell me what was coming, but instead he taught me to put my trust in the one who does and the one who could sustain me through those things. The good thing is this, like I said, this friend was going through some things. So we spent, a couple of us spent part of the night staying up with him and praying with him and everything. By the time we were done, a couple days later, man, he was great because he had renewed his strength. He'd renewed his faith. Sometimes you need your friends to help you do that. And there was a strength about his life. He still didn't know the answers. He just renewed the relationship that he needed to the one who does know the answers, right? And you and I are the same way in our lives. So here's my question, my real question. Can you look and know the future by understanding and knowing the past? And the answer to that in the Bible is absolutely. Sometimes people will say, you know, but your faith is blind. Listen, if you have faith, if you have what the Bible calls faith, your faith is not blind. Your faith is built on the God who was and the God who has done these things. And here are the things that he has done that in the Bible are recorded. I mean, you can go back and read those things. Unlike any other documents or history, in all of history, it is recorded and it has been protected and it's there for you to go back and see just how strong you are when you put your faith into the God of history and the God that sent his son, Jesus Christ, and he is also the God of the future. And that becomes your strength, not because you know everything ahead, but you know the one who is ahead. He's always been faithful. That means in the future, he's going to be what? Faithful. He's always been compassionate. That means in the future, he's always going to be what? He's always been righteous and just. That means in the future, he's going to be what? Yeah. So he gives us his character and what he's like, and we see him in all these situations so that we could put our hope and our trust in him as we move forward. For me, you know, one of the things that really changed my life was when I became a believer, you know, really gave my life to him. I started reading the Bible. Now, I read it before. I was raised in a church, and you were supposed to read 3 chapters a day. Just let you know, I did that, but it was just more like something you're supposed to do, the motions you're supposed to do. And when I was in my junior year in high school, I got involved with some others, and my brother and sister did also, who it really changed my life. And we had what was called a living Bible. Anybody have a living Bible way back? It's a paraphrase. It was written by the former editor of the Christianity Today, and he decided his kids can't read the Bible because the translations were so old. So he paraphrased it to help them. And man, we just got so excited about reading the Living Bible, and it was in a green fake leather book kind of look. And so this is my Bible. It's not quite that way, and this is not the Living. This is a New American Standard, but as you can see, it's lime green. And the reason I have a lime green Bible is my hope is I won't be able to lose it because, you know, here's one thing I know. Nobody in here, if you're a man, you're not going to walk off, steal my Bible, right? The ladies might, but the men won't. And I intentionally have it that way. It's not leather. Mine's made out of some kind of petroleum product. Thank you, Texas. You know, so I don't know what it's made, but it's really strong. It's really hardy. This is a New American Standard, which I had a friend when I went to college. He gave me a New American Standard Bible because he decided it was time for me to get a serious Bible. And it was a serious Bible. New American Standard is still probably viewed as maybe the most literally accurate translation into English in the Bible. Unfortunately, that's not all good. Just let you know. Some of the modern translations that are not as literally accurate, they translate more into things, words you understand. A lot of times they're better. And the reason I say that is because, as one of the critics said, English as it has never been spoken before. That's how he called the New American Standard. Because translating it literally, you know, the Greek to the English is not necessarily a good thing because they don't translate word for word. There's one place, and I think it's in Ephesians, one of the epistles, where there is a sentence in the New American Standard Bible that is 63 or 64 words long. If you're an English teacher, you know, is that a good thing? Really bad thing, right? It's not a compound sentence. It's a compound, 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 you know. So you, what does that mean? And that, you know, it's difficult to read and understand. And a lot of more modern translations then try to work through that and try to figure that out. But it really helped me. And this is not the one that I cut my teeth on coming out of college. It's in my office, and I don't bring it anymore. I used to use it. It has a real leather cover. And things like that. But if I brought it, I would experience Bible dandruff. Because if I were to open it, the pages would start flying out. Because it's just worn out. You know, I've worn it out. And then I'd have to sort the pages back and try to put them back in there together. So this one holds up really well. One of the reasons I like this one is I learned to write in my Bible. I learned to mark and all. And this one has a lot of extra. This is an inductive study Bible. It just has a lot of space in it, blank space, because I love to write in my Bible about what I'm learning and what I see, because this has become a real tool for me in order to grow, and it still is. It still is. I still, when I go through struggles and difficulties, I run to this, and I read again, and I say, God, speak to me, and what I acknowledge, I know you will. I know you will help me through these things. I know you will teach me things that I never understood before. You know, one of the things I love about the Bible is today in 2021, after we went through 2020, there are places, things I've read in the Bible, I've read them 100 times. I've got notes all over them, and they become fresh and brand new because of what we have gone through, right? And you're like, wow, I never realized what that said, or I just never caught it before, or there's some things I just sort of read over before, and now all of a sudden it comes to life, and there's a newness and a freshness that I never understood, I never saw before. See, if you look in the past, you look in your past, I know you might look in your past and say, but I'm trying to forget my past. But if you look in the past and see not just, you know, the struggles and the troubles you've gone through, but you look and you see who God himself is and the faithfulness of God, then you run to the Bible and you realize this, he's preserved his writings and his words and the things that he says so that we would know. We would know. You know what? I love to challenge people who are big history people. Find a book in history that has the incredible background and the pedigree that this book has. You cannot find it. You can't find it. This book was preserved and written like no other book was ever done. The Old Testament, the Hebrew, you know what the Hebrews would do? They had guys that they call scribes. And those men and women were charged with one thing, and that is copying the text, the prophets, the words, the law, over and over again. And they would copy it because they had no way to print it. So their job was, as soon as they finished, start over again and just copy. And they spent their whole lives just copying it and making sure that it was accurate and it was preserved for us. They would do this. They would keep ledgers, and they would say on this page of the text, this word was used 3 times, and they would go back after they were finished and check and make sure those 3 were there, and they'd have whole ledgers of everything so that they could double check and triple check so that if anything were wrong, they could either correct it, and if they had more than, I forgot if it was 2 or 3 things on the page that had to be corrected, they would destroy that page and start over again. That's how serious they took translating and copying and handing it back down to us. New Testament, those letters were different. That we still have tens of thousands of fragments or whole letters in the New Testament that are still hand copied, that were written and passed on, so that we can go back still and say, this is what it said 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago. I mean, we can still go back and do that because of the magnitude of the data that is out there. And you and I have translations like no generation has ever known. I mean, there's so many modern. I just saw that one group is working on 30 new translations of the Bible. That's their goal over the next couple of years. And these are all into new dialects that have formed, and they're going to translate the Bible into these new dialects. We have copies in our culture. In fact, it's one of the problems. It is. The Bible is so plentiful and so easy to find. Somebody did a survey, how many Bibles do you own? I have no idea how many Bibles I own. I mean, I probably own 30, 40 Bibles, maybe more. I have no idea. And it's been done so many times, but here's the problem. It's so common for us. It's so common that so many times we just take it for granted. We just assume it's there. We don't necessarily dig in ourselves. We don't read it for ourselves. And the Bible was given for a reason, so that you and I would know God. We would know the certainty of who God is. We could plan our lives on something that would last, and there would be a strength in our lives that we could get no other way. as opposed to a culture, and all cultures are this way, that is constantly changing. It constantly changes. You have something to anchor your life upon that will not change, that is as sure as the sun coming up in the morning. It is there. You know God. This is who He's, what He's done and what He will do because of what you know He has done. Okay, I know you say, man, you're preaching. Okay, so let me get to some things in the outline. In fact, let me put it this way. Is it possible that you can tell the future by the past? And I would contend with you that the answer to that is yes. And I know you may say, well, exactly where do you get that? So let me take you to, this is one of the parables that Jesus told. And you find it, I won't read the whole thing in Matthew, in the seventh chapter of Matthew. You know this parable, so even as I read part of it, you'll recognize it. Jesus said, everyone who hears my words and obeys them, and that means they don't just, you know, hear them, you know, physically. I mean, they realize what they are and they try to apply it to their life. He says, they are like a wise man who built his house on, say it with me, on what? Rock, yes. It rained hard. We went through that, right? Talking about last week. It rained hard. The floods came. The winds blew and it hit that house. But he's talking about the house. It did not fall because it was built on, tell me, built on what? Rock, yes. Now, this is what he's saying. He's saying, well, the reason the house doesn't fall, it's an illustration of my life and your life, is because you have built your life on something as ancient can possibly be. It has not been moved. It will not be moved. You have anchored your life on something that in the future, you know that that anchor still will hold up to anything that comes in the future. That's what Jesus is saying. That's what you're supposed to do. He contrasts it with the foolish man. And the foolish man is a man that would hear his words and not do those things, not build his life on the words that Jesus said. He said the foolish man built his house on something else that is ancient. He built his life on what? His house on the sand. But here's what you know about the sand. It shifts. It moves. It is not stable. You are not wise to build your house on the beach, on the sand. You're not. You've got to go down to something deeper and more solid and more foundational than that. I was listening to a special, and I don't know how they determined this, but they had decided they found rock somewhere. Maybe you saw it. And that this rock was part of the earth's mantle, which means this rock came from miles down in the earth's mantle. Now, how they determine that, I don't know. And they would say, like, this rock is, I don't know, 40 million years old. And I watched it, I went and picked up a rock and I came back in. I was like, well, how old is this rock then? You know, because as far as I know, it's all been here for a long time. That's not actually what he's saying. He's saying that you've built your something that cannot be moved. So your life will not be moved. As you go into the future, it's not because you know everything. You've just built your life on something that no matter what comes, your life will stand through that. It will hold up because of what your life has been built upon and what your life has been anchored upon. This is something that a couple weeks ago I was reading. It just kind of jumped out to me again. I just never thought of it before. This is in John's gospel, the very first part of it, the gospel of Jesus. But John writes it, and he talks about another John in it. But this is how he starts in the 14th verse in chapter 1. He says, and the word, this is the Greek idea of the logic, the reason that everything came from, the intelligence that everything came from. And the word became flesh. He's speaking of Jesus. He dwelt among us. And we saw his glory, glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of an amazing combination, grace and truth, the things that we think, well, they can't be together. Oh, yeah, full of grace and truth. And then he adds this, John testified about him and cried out saying, this is not the same John that wrote this. This is, he's talking about John the Baptist, you know, the guy that started that denomination. And you're supposed to laugh. That is a joke. He was John the Baptizer. He did not start the Baptist. I talked to somebody last month that still thinks that. But he didn't do that. This is John the Baptizer. He's the last prophet of the Old Testament types of prophet. He's the forerunner to Jesus. He said, John testified about him and cried out this, saying this. Now catch this. This is really cool. Here's what John says. He says, this was he of whom I said, he who comes, look at this, after me, the future, he who comes after me has a higher rank than me, than I have. It literally, he says, he has become before me. The one that comes after me has actually come before me. And he says, why? Because he has existed before I existed. He's going into the past. So as John's looking at his life, you should be able to look at your life this way. As I live my life, there's one who is coming after me, or who is extended into the future, who actually came before me. He's extended into the past. And I'm just here living my life. My life's going to take a short amount of time, relatively. It's going to be over. But I have a chance to live my life anchored to the one who came before me. He's ancient. He is stable. He is trustworthy. And he is actually the one who comes after me. In John's case, John is his disciples that he's speaking to. And he's saying, here's one that comes after me, because Jesus came after John. But he's actually more ancient than me. Now, I know that you may think, in our culture, we love the future, right? We love the newest thing. But that is not the way cultures have been forever. Cultures forever honor the past, and they speak of the past. And if you don't have a history, and if you're not anchored to the past, your life is insignificant. That's the way cultures have been forever. We're kind of a strange thing in modern day. Remember, Jesus is speaking to the woman at the well, and as he's speaking to her, she's kind of then combating him, and she says this to him. She said, wait a minute, see this well? Because he talked about giving her water. He says, Jacob dug this well. This is Jacob's well. You're not saying that you're greater than Jacob, are you? Now, why she says that is because Jacob came before. He's passed away. You're just here now. You can't say that you're greater than Jacob, can you? And Jesus said, yeah, I can. I was there before Jacob was there. Because they understood that as being attached to God and to ancient things. This is, like I said, this is it's something that cultures have always done. If you ever read about Nazi Germany, the Nazis spent so much money and so much time trying to anchor their existence as the superior race, as we were destined to rule the world, on the past. They would try to go and find Atlantis. They collected all the relics. They tried to collect relics about Jesus, every relic, everything in the past, and build their life on something. They talked about the Aryan race, which they never were part of the Aryan race, but they tried to build it that way because they knew without a past, without something to build on, you cannot claim the future. It's true. You can't. You can't just show up and say the future is mine, because your life was built on something, right? Everyone here, you had parents, grandparents, those who came before you. I love to talk about it. Sorry, I won't get too patriotic. You live in a nation that was built with sweat and blood and sacrifice, and you live and I live on the backs and the sacrifice of people who became before us. And in that sense, they are greater than we are. We just benefit from what they did. And if we don't attach ourselves to that, if we don't look back, yeah, mistakes, failures in the past also that we're trying to get over. But if you don't attach yourself to that, you have no future, because you have no past to build your life upon. And so when troubles and struggles come, you have nothing to anchor yourself to that will cause you to be able to go through those things too, to make the same sacrifices, to hold to the same beliefs as those people held to also. Sorry, I'm preaching again. But anyway, it's what Jesus is saying. It's what John was saying. And this guy is the future. He's actually a good thing, because he was the past. And I'm just here right now. Just amazing to me. So this is what I wanted to say then. So why has the Bible survived for so long? Well, it survives so that you and I can anchor our lives to the past, and it would give us a sure path into the future. Let me give you Here's Matthew chapter 5, how Jesus said it. He said, "Don't misunderstand why I came. I did not come to abolish the law of Moses and the writings of the prophets. I came to accomplish their purpose. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not even the smallest detail of God's law," this is ancient, right, "will disappear until its purpose is achieved." So three things. First of all, it helps me keep my life in proper perspective. Psalm 119 says this: "How can a young man keep his way pure?" That means, how can you stay on track? How can you build your life on something that will last and that will have substance, you know, to it? He gives his answer: by keeping it according to your word, because the word sustains us. Or James writes it this way. He says, "But don't just listen to God's word." He says, "You must do what it says. Otherwise, you are only," oh, is this tough? "You're only fooling yourself." And he uses this example. So he says, "For if you listen to the word and don't obey, it's like glancing at your face in a mirror. You see yourself, you walk away, and you forget what you look like. But if you look carefully into the perfect law that sets you free, and if you do what it says and don't forget what you heard, then God will bless you in what you're doing." This morning, most of us got up and we looked in the mirror, right? I mean, that's kind of part of the morning routine. There's a few that didn't, and you can pick them out. And so, okay, you know, I know you're saying, "Well, you didn't obviously spend a lot of time." No, okay. So, and we do it for a reason, because we need to be able to see ourselves as we are, and we need to make some adjustments, right? That would be a good thing. And part of doing that is when we see ourselves as we really are, some of it we don't like. I don't. You know, as you get older, one of the things that happens is I see myself in my mind not the way I am most of the time. I see myself as a younger person. I do, just to let you know. And then I go into the mirror and I go, "Whoa, you know, what just happened?" Because that's not how I see myself. That's not how I act sometimes. I think I can do things that I can no longer do. That's just the way we are. And he's saying the word is like that. The word helps us keep our lives in perspective. It constantly is like a mirror that says, "This is who you are." Now, that's good and bad. It shows us who we are in God's eyes, that we were created like him. But it also shows our flaws. It shows our mistakes. It shows the things that we don't want to forget, that we need to work to overcome those things, that those things still need to be corrected in our lives. And you don't want to walk away and have some fairy tale idea of who you are or what your life is about. That the Bible doesn't do that for us. The Bible shows us who we are so that we would be honest, and so that we would listen to God, and so that God really could lead us and guide us, show us who we are, and lead us in a path that says, "And this is what you were made to be, a good thing that you were made to be." But if we live a delusional idea, a delusional image of who we are, if that's what we're living by, then we don't listen to those things, and we don't benefit from those things that God himself tries to help us with and tries to teach us. I wasn't going to do this, but I ended up doing it the last service. If you look in my calendar, you will see that Friday I wrote down four things by the date that I realize I'm not doing as well as I should and that I need to work on and to correct. And if you're like me, that's painful. You know, you don't want to recognize your shortcomings in life. And I know you may say, "What were they?" I'm not telling you what those things are. You know, so these are things that I, between me and God, I realize, okay, I can do this better. Just one of them is sometimes I joke around too much with people. And I realize it. I was reading something that Benjamin Franklin wrote, and he talked about that. And I said, you know, he's right. You know, sometimes you're joking around, but sometimes that is hurtful with someone, and I realize I need to work on this. I need to think about this more. And there are five things that I wrote down on the calendar that I realize I need to work on these things. I need to remember, because I forget them, and I just go about doing what I'm doing, and I need to go back and look in the mirror and say, "Oh, yeah, that's right. That's not what God made me to be. I can do better than that. He wants me to do better than that." How about the second one? Shows me the best way to live my life, and that is exactly what the Bible is there for, so that you would pick up a path and a way to live your life. Psalm 119, 105 says this: "Your life, or your word, is a lamp to guide my feet, and a light for my path. In other words, it shows us the direction to go, how to live. And down in verse 130, it's a long psalm, he says, I like this. He says, the unfolding of your words give light. It gives understanding to the simple. That's literally what it says. It's this idea of God's words. They kind of unfold as you go. You take the next step, and then it unfolds for the next step. And you take the next step, and it just kind of keeps guiding you. It didn't say, okay, way down the road. It just keeps you moving in the right direction, on the right path, so that you know this is God himself who is directing me and leading me. But, you know, you have to go back and you have to be honest with God and let God be honest with you in that path. Or how about Proverbs 30, verse 5 says this, the believer replied, every promise of God proves true. He protects everyone who runs to him for help. This word for true, some of your translations will say, every promise of God proves tested, or every promise of God proves to be pure. So it's the idea, this word, of you would take silver or maybe some ore, and you would heat it up, and you would, you know, make it liquid, and then it separates. The silver separates from the stuff that's not silver. Is that called smelting? Is that what you call it? Somebody knows stuff like that better than me. The smelting, and you can separate then the impurities so that what you've got is pure silver. That's the word that they used in the Hebrew here. So God's word is going to hold true as something that has been put under fire, put under flame, but all that has done is made it more pure, more reliable, more true, more tested in life. And God uses it in our lives the same way. Paul writes to Timothy, he says this, he says, all scripture is inspired by God, comes from his mouth, his mind, you know, his heart. And it's useful. I like this from J.B. Phillips, his paraphrase way back when. He would say it this way. It is useful for teaching the faith, for correcting error, for resetting the direction of a man's life, and training him in good living. Wow. Or how about the third thing? It brings new life and energy to my soul. I can tell you for me, whenever I'm struggling, whenever I'm it's just difficult, or it just feels like, you know, I've lost some of the joy of life, or you know, there's just something kind of draining in life. When I go back to the Bible, and a lot of times I'll just get away and I'll take my Bible and a marker, pen, sometimes a pad with me also, and just let God speak to me. And I pray, I say, God, would you know I need you. You know I need to know. Would you speak to me? And I pray, I know you're going to speak to me because I believe that he will. And what I found is always, always, there's an energy that comes back. There's a refreshing to who you are. It's sort of like the psalmist says when he says, as the deer panteth for the brook, right? My soul longs for you, because God anchors us once again. And there's just no way you can be anchored to God, and you can find this apart from his word. You can't. And to do this and to neglect something that God has given us, and he's protected, and he's given us so much opportunity to read the Bible and to know the Bible, means that the problem is not with the culture, and the problem is not with God himself, and the problem is not with so many translations. The problem is with what? I just neglected it. That's the only problem. I just missed it. It's so common out there that somehow we think by osmosis, you know, we just get it. Because you can find a Bible everywhere. You can pull it up on your phone, on your app. You can drive down the road and find the Bible on the back of somebody's bumper. They'll have a sticker, right? I mean, you know, and it's just everywhere. But the question is, will you go away? Will you take it? And will you let it feed you? Will you let it nourish you? Will you let it, you know, hit you right in the face with some things? Will you let it direct your life? Will you let it protect you? Because it does. It brings back a core protection. Will you let it anchor you? Because if you let your life be anchored on what God has said and protected for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, like no other writing and no other book in all of history, if you will let that be the anchor of your life, God will equip you for the future. You can handle this year, the next year. You can handle a culture, just like I said, that is going to shift and fade. And, you know, next year the culture is going to be different than it was this year. And yes, it's going to constantly move and change. And rather than, you know, freak out and try to batter a culture with your life, you put your hope and your faith on who God is. God will strengthen you through that. He will take you through that. Because you built your house, your life, on something that is stable. I love Psalm 119. When I was in college, we used to sing a song built on this verse. This is Psalm 19, I'm sorry. And these verses, and I won't sing for you this morning, but this is actually the translation it was taken from, and this is what it says. It says, the law of the Lord is perfect. And then I have these next phrases in every verse highlighted. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. That means, you know, you just don't know. A simpleton would be someone who's naive, but God knows. The precepts of the Lord are right. They rejoice the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure. It enlightens the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold. They are sweeter also than honey or the dripping of the honeycomb. In their day, man, if you ran across, you know, a honeycomb, you know, where the bees had made honey and you were weak, and the honey, the pure sugar of it, you know, it just energizes you once again. That's why I don't use artificial sweeteners. It just energizes. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm meddling there also, right? Man, it just, something about it just gives strength and energy to us. Verse 11, he says, moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping of them, say this with me, there is what? There is great reward. Yeah. In keeping of them, there is great reward. Now, we like rewards. In fact, what happens to us many times is we think we know what rewards are. Boy, if I knew the future, man, I'd make a lot of money. If I knew the future, you know, my team would always win. If I knew the future, man, just think of how good my life would be. No, 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 no. It wouldn't be that good. But if you know who God is, the Ancient of Days, if you know what God himself has done and what he has protected, for, if you can build your life upon that, oh my goodness, do you find reward in life and going forward in the future, in things that will last, in things that matter, and things that when you get to the end of your life, you will look back and say, I am so thankful that God took me through this. I am so thankful that this is what I've anchored my life upon, because I've gone through these things and God has proven himself certain and sure. Last little story. I don't know if you like Joyce Meyer, but I know some people like her, some people don't. I was listening to her a couple weeks ago, early one morning. And she's in her mid-70s or something like this now. And Joyce Meyer was saying this about her life. She said, you know, I used to say this about my life, that I'm so grateful for my life. God has been so good to me, except for, and she'd go back to when she was abused, sexually abused as a child. And she said, except for that, and if God would just, you know, I pray all the time if he would just take that away, or if that, you know. So she would always do this. And this one time I was listening to her like a couple weeks ago, and this is what she said. She said, you know, I don't say that anymore. She said, now I look back and I say, God, I am so grateful to you. I'm so glad you have been so good to me in my life, even when I was sexually abused. She said, I don't see it that way, the way I used to. I say I'm grateful even for that. You know why? Because God, because the strength of who he is, God takes even things that should not have happened, things that were bad things that happened in my life, and God took them, and by his strength, he made those things good in my life. He made those things a strength in my life. Wouldn't you like to have a life like that? Where you can say, no matter what, none of those things stop God. None of those things overcome him. And then she said this, I can share with people and help people because of what God took me through that I could never have done before if he'd not taken me through them. Because they go through problems, they go through difficulties. and I can relate to them, and I can say, yes, so did I, and here's the strength I found that took me through them. And if I had not gone through those things, even that one thing, she said, that I said forever, God, if you just take that away, I could not have reached, helped, strengthened somebody else. You know, don't you know that's what God does? And he does it through his word. He teaches us of his faithfulness. He's been faithful before. People thrown in prison, thrown to lions, thrown in a fire. None of those things overwhelmed them. None of those things, you know, did them in. Joseph, you know, betrayed by his own brothers and sold as a slave. Yet none of those things stopped God in Joseph's life. And God, through his word, he strengthens us, he satisfies, he renews us, he gives us energy that we never had before.